Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast.
It is.
My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter 2.
Peter 2?
Yeah.
The sequel?
Yeah.
What new features do you have?
Shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Even shorter. You know, you just take every trait and,
right,
and double it, including the shortness.
Okay. Can you double shortness?
Yeah.
Right.
I go to twice as many sort of National Trust castles on the weekend.
Brilliant. Are many of those DLC or?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All of them.
Okay.
I've got two fiancés now.
Wow. I was going to say, are you multiplayer now?
Yeah.
The first one was a single-player, narrative-driven experience, and now you're a free-to-play battle royale shooter.
I am.
Peter 2.
Yes.
In cinemas, confusingly.
Yeah.
Very, very soon.
Weird.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is a video game podcast, as we said. Someone tweeted me a link to a recommended video of the 2017 Indoor Triple Jump Championships.
Oh, right, okay.
That's popped up for them.
Sorry about that.
We are winning the fight, though.
We are mostly, yeah.
We'll have to do sort of a check-in every few months just to see what our standings are. Oh, and by the way, it's our 50th episode.
What?
It's our 50th episode.
We're hitting so many milestones at the moment. We've been going for just over a year. We've just hit the 1 year milestone. We've just done episode 69 of Worst Games Ever.
Nice.
Since the very beginning of the format.
Nice.
Episode 50
of the podcast,
and we've hit 50,000 subscribers.
We're just about to hit 51,000 subscribers already. It's growing pretty fast. And by the way, this week we did a live stream celebrating the 1 year anniversary of the first stream we did as Triple Jump. You know, after the redundant jump business.
Yes.
We had to do it on Friday because the actual anniversary was the Saturday, which is the day that this is released.
Oh, well,
so
there you go.
So this is officially the anniversary of the first appearance of us as Triple Jump as well.
Wow.
It's a lot, isn't it?
We should have commemorized is the actual correct word there.
Yes.
We should have commemorized the redundant jump video.
You think?
That was our first, yeah.
It's still unlisted on the back end of YouTube.
We should have just
it's
done
private.
Maybe we should have just done a fake rebranding video on that day, whenever that was, probably like a week or so
we
ago.
We already gave them all a heart attack with the Triple Jump Isn't Changing video title.
Triple Jump is becoming Quadruple Jump.
Yes.
And if anyone has bought any Triple Jump merch in the last year, we will send a free replacement.
We will refund all of it. We're not doing that, thankfully. What we should have done to commemorate the occasion, though, is perhaps a decorative collectible spoon or plate. Do you have a preference?
A spoon, because I can use it as a shovel.
That's true. You could dig a big old trench for yourself when you make those fun comments sometimes.
Like, yeah, definitely. Like in Chicken Run, they use spoons as
they do
as spades.
Fun fact, not really the correct podcast for this anecdote, but I used to collect commemorative spoons.
Did you actually?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a few. And then once I bought a few of them and then lost interest, that was the thing that my family knew to get Ben when they went to a place.
Oh, no.
So I just sort of stockpiled these little teaspoons in plastic cases. I had one for P&O Ferries, I think was the first one I ever bought because, honestly, probably because I just didn't have a lot of money and I was on a ferry.
And you wanted to buy something.
Yeah, and I thought, well, that looks premium because it's in a little display case. Mm. And then that was it. I was the spoon guy.
Spoon boy.
A spoon boy.
Like salad fingers.
Exactly.
Rusty spoons.
Exactly. So look out for triplejud.mup/shop. There will be a Triple Jump spoon.
I had a little silver spoon from when I was born.
I was going to say, was it in your mouth?
My mouth. from when I was baptized, someone got me a little, I think my godmother got me a little Peter Rabbit silver spoon in a display case.
Did it have a picture of James Corden on it?
No, it didn't. It was pre-sacrilege.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Right, let's get on with the podcast, shall we? This podcast is, of course, sponsored every week by a fantastic company who we fully back and believe in because they've given us money to talk
about
them
real.
At the beginning and the end of the podcast. This week, it is we're sponsored by a game.
Oh, okay.
It's called Pawcraft 3 Reforged Edition.
Mm-hmm.
That's Pawcraft 3 Reforged Edition.
Is that a commentary on the quality of the Reforged Edition? Or?
Absolutely not. No, this is a separate game.
Oh, it's a separate... Oh,
this,
okay.
This is a completely separate game. So you may have heard of the other game that's sort of come down with a blizzard of bad reviews. but this one is actually... It's for people who can't necessarily... who don't have the disposable income to waste... on Warcraft 3 Reforged Edition, which is, you know, perhaps appropriately, quite poor. But Pawcraft 3
with all of them.
Reforged Edition, it's made out of paper and cardboard. So you get what you're paying for. It's not expensive, but you get little cutouts of the men and women and orcs and orcsesses.
Yeah.
And you get to push them around your little paper map. And it's Pawcraft, not because it's bad, but because it's for people who can't afford
bad
Warcraft.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
And also for people who don't want to waste money on the actual Warcraft when they could just buy Pawcraft, which is better and made out of paper, so it's cheaper.
Little side note here. If you own a copy of Pawcraft, why don't you own a house? Is my question there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is that a lot of people who do own Pawcraft do own a house, which... is, you know, it's a paradox and therefore proves that this is not real.
Oh,
it's pretend. We were playing pretend. Pawcraft 3 isn't real, but Warcraft 3 Reforged Edition very much is, and we will talk about that more a bit later on in the podcast. It's time to begin with a question, which, Peter, comes from our fantastic patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump. They are the true sponsors of the show each and every week. There are various tiers where you can get rewards. $1 or higher, though, gets you access to the weekly podcast posts that go out on Tuesday. I post them every Tuesday, and they run until about lunchtime or afternoon on a Wednesday, which is when I take the questions and put together our running order. For the show, which we record on Thursday morning. So any amount, $1 or maybe even more if you want to get access to other things, or maybe you just want to support us a little bit more financially, that's absolutely fine. But you will get access to the weekly podcast post and ask questions just like...
Christian Sturt did.
Mm. Christian Sturt did.
Christian Sturt begins with a little note to the lads, or ladies, it
or
says.
Or ladies.
Referring to us.
Or ladies.
You are on a half century of podcasts. Congratulations, I've listened to them all. Do I win a prize?
Yes, a spoon.
Oh, good.
And episode 51.
There you go. Anywho, my question. What video game franchise, it must have three games to count, has its best games in the middle? Franchises are supposed to make a huge impact initially, but also go out with a bang. But which fail to do that and instead do most of the hard work in the middle? As always, you're the best. Thank you for your work, Christian.
You're the best, Christian. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I've got three that sprung to mind immediately. And they're all from roughly the same sort of 2-year period.
Okay, mine aren't.
Because there haven't really been any trilogies this entire console generation.
Yeah.
Because games, you know, big games take more and more money and time to make. I'm going back to the PS3 time.
Right, yeah.
The PS3 zone.
I've got one from the PS3 zone and one from before then. Thing is, like, these didn't have to be trilogies as part of the answer to the question, but it's kind of
at
easier.
Least three games.
Yeah, it's easier to get your head around beginning, middle, and end if you're just dealing with three. So I was also kind of just thinking about trilogies.
Yeah.
But also mine are, the middle one is the best, but, you know, they still started with a bang and went out with a bang. You know, Christian sort of said about, oh, well, you know, they should be best at the start and end.
Hmm.
So mine aren't, they didn't have a terrible number one and number three.
This is where you need that spoon, isn't it?
Yeah.
just go right down in that hole.
They didn't have a terrible 1 and 3, but 2 was the best.
Right. I completely agree. Yeah. Those are mine as well. I think either side, all games are good. Yeah. All the games are good, but the second one was the best. Mm-hmm. Should we throw back and forth?
Yeah.
I've got 3. Have you got 2?
I've got 2.
Okay, so I'll go first. My first one is Batman Arkham City.
Oh, yeah?
I think Arkham Asylum is a phenomenal game, and I love how self-contained it is. And lots of people will say that's the best. And I'm inclined to agree that it is probably the strongest one. But for me personally, Arkham City and getting access to that open world environment as Batman was unbelievably, mind-blowingly amazing and cool. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken about it on the podcast before, how excited I was, where I really wanted to pre-order it with the animated Batman skin. But I think that was a US-only pre-order bonus. And in the UK, you could get the Dark Knight Returns, which is the classic Frank Miller one where he's older Batman. Mm. And I wanted to play through the game as that, so I actually bought the graphic novel, The Dark Knight Returns, and read the whole thing so I could understand why I was playing as this. Like, I was really excited for this game. So the second one for me is the best one, with obviously Arkham Knight being still really good, and it's the ultimate Batman game. Mm. But they were so ambitious that there were various shortcomings. You know, the Batmobile stuff wasn't good, and
infamously
there was some weird stuff in it. But I think Arkham City, it's a very strong trilogy, but Arkham City, I think, was the best one.
Okay, yeah. I've got one here that I'm dealing with it in its trilogy form, even though there are games that have come since then. But Uncharted, the original sort of Nathan Drake trilogy.
I thought about this one,
yeah,
but I decided against it.
Oh, did you? Do you think 3 is better than 2?
I think 3 is better than 2.
Oh,
I think 2's the biggest leap, but I think 3 is a shinier version of 2, and that's not a bad thing.
No. I mean, I guess you could say that, but I...
But that's the main opinion. Like, what's the
prevailing...
The popular consent, the,
yeah, the
whatever.
Consensus.
The consensus is the second one is the best.
2
so,
is the best, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I definitely agree that there's not much in it between 2 and 3. 2 is definitely just a huge leap from 1, without a doubt. 1 is still good in and of itself, but the moment that you pick up 2 or 3... If you ever go back to 1, you're like, oh yeah, this was, you know, fine. This was
green,
a
isn't
good
it?
Game. Yeah, very green. Yeah, you don't really go anywhere. It's all pretty much all set on that island, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, bit at sea.
Yeah, a little bit at sea. But number 2, you know, you're traveling here, there and everywhere, planes, trains and automobiles. That, in fact, the train segment in particular, I really enjoyed.
Yes, that was groundbreaking for the time.
Yeah.
It won all the awards that year.
It did.
In a year that had Assassin's Creed 2 and Batman Arkham Asylum. It was a really strong year for games, and Uncharted 2 was the best one.
Uncharted 3 definitely has its moments, though, as well. That bit where you're walking through the desert and it just is like slowly transitioning from scene to scene, but you're still in control. Like, it looks like a cutscene, like you know. And that was immersive. Don't know why that's my highlight of that entire game.
It's just very memorable.
Desert,
I think that's... You can playing through those games, you can see Naughty Dog grow as a studio in terms of sort of pushing the boundaries of video games with storytelling and presentation.
Yeah, no, for sure. So 3, definitely, it's a close call, but I still prefer 2, I think.
2 has Chloe Fraser in it for the first time.
Yeah, that's true.
But 3 has Charlie Cutter.
Oh, yeah, we do like Charlie.
We do like Charlie. Here at Triple Jump, we do like Charlie.
Yes.
Stay down. Stay down. Great.
Drake.
Great, great man.
Yeah.
My next one is Assassin's Creed 2 of the original trilogy.
Okay.
If you want to go Assassin's Creed 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. Didn't like 1.
Didn't you?
I've said this before. I just did not like it. And it turns out I'm not actually alone. A lot of people couldn't really get into the first one. I just found it quite dull. Loved the idea.
Yeah.
But found the setting and the characters pretty boring. And I got a bit bored of it. And it didn't feel, obviously, as the first game, didn't feel as refined in terms of assassinating and jumping off rooftops and stabbing folk and so on. Not saying it's a bad game. Just worse than most. 2 blew my mind. I got it way after it came out. Mm. I loved the meta game of you having this mansion that accrued wealth over time that you could then spend on stuff. So I used to just leave the console on and have my works of art tick up money over the time period. And I also thought that the... Just make your coffee as loud as you. Everyone's having a chat out there now. I found the sort of the actual real world stuff to be at its most interesting during Assassin's Creed.
Oh, really?
About them being in the present day version of this ruined mansion and stuff, and going around and finding secrets that I knew were there because I was just there in the past.
Right.
I thought that was really cool. And Ezio obviously is, you know, great character. Really like Ezio. And then three, the American Revolutionary War. I thought it was really boring.
Yeah, no.
I thought, what's his name? What's the main character? Is it Connor?
I can't remember. I would know.
Would you like me to stab it, Lieutenant?
Yeah.
I think it's Connor. Thought he was really, really boring as a character. I thought everyone involved was pretty boring. I mean, I'm not small-minded enough for it to stick in my craw that I was killing British soldiers.
Right.
I didn't care about that. That didn't bother me. But I just found it really tedious in a way. Everywhere looked the same.
The free running wasn't as good either.
No, exactly, because there were trees.
A recently settled area.
Yeah. So all of the areas looked the same. And I remember being really frustrated because when I was in a town and there was like a fortified Castilla or whatever, where all the soldiers are, barracks or what have you, I couldn't get over the walls because I wasn't allowed to yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm free running at them. And then I honestly didn't think that game was very good. That's one of the occasions in these games where I will say I didn't think Assassin's Creed 3 was very good. But Assassin's Creed 2, excellent. Love that game.
I agree that it was the best of the trilogy, but I did also enjoy 1. Mm. You know, you say a lot of people didn't, but yeah, I thought 1 was pretty good.
That lady who came up with that series, I think she's the one who's now working for Google Stadia.
Oh, right, yeah.
At that studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping to see big things from her.
Yeah, exciting.
Yeah.
My last answer is the Spyro trilogy.
Mm.
Now, this is a question of what I think is, personally, I think is the best quality game. Yeah. Not my favorite. Spyro 1 will always be my favorite, but that's heavily like based on nostalgia more than anything else.
Right.
And I'm well aware that, you know, gameplay-wise, Spyro 1 is not the best. Spyro 2 and 3, of course, have all sorts of... I mean, they're orb challenges in Spyro 2 and they're egg challenges in Spyro 3. But, you know, you go and do all manner of things with little vehicles and creatures and God knows what. And
Sheila.
You know, you could argue that in 3, there's so much more gameplay variety because you get to be Sergeant Bird and other people. But I don't really like playing as any of the alternate characters in Spyro 3. I don't think they control very well. You know, I don't really like some of the levels either. Or I think they're less sort of distinguishable. Some of them kind of blur into one in my head. Now, it doesn't help that it's the game I played the least, but maybe it's the game I played the least because I find it the least exciting.
Yeah.
Whereas I think 2 has its own identity, and every level seems very different from all the others, and lots of fun orb challenges. Don't have to play as a Wink Wonk character, but you've got, you know, new exciting things like special abilities, like head bash and other ones, swimming.
You
know, so I think there's a lot to be said for Spyro 2, just in terms of, in a more objective sense, if I put my nostalgia to one side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Spyro 2 is probably the best.
Fair enough.
You're a Spyro 3 boy though, aren't you?
I am, but that's because it was the only one I had.
Right.
I would imagine. So for the same reason that you gravitate towards Spyro 1, I gravitate towards Spyro 3 because that's the game that I had. But I agree with all that. Those mini games can jump off a cliff for all I care. What, you don't like shooting from the hip as a weird space chimp with a laser that doesn't work properly?
Yeah, with enemies that just constantly respawn until you destroy the generator.
Awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Great.
But I do love that game, though. My final one is a pretty obvious one. It's Mass Effect.
Oh, of course,
Still have not played Mass Effect 1 because it wasn't on PlayStation.
Have you never played Mass Effect 1?
Nope.
I just assumed that you had because you're a Mass Effect boy.
Mass Effect boy, I know. Mass Effect 1 was still exclusive to Xbox and PC when Mass Effect 2 was ported to PS3. So Mass Effect 2 came with an interactive comic at the start,
right.
Where
the
you
comic,
could make
yeah.
it, it sort of filled you in on what happened and you could make decisions to shape the world, which I think is the way to do it with those games. You know, The Witcher 3, I don't think The Witcher 3 did that either
when it came over.
Which is a shame. But Mass Effect 2, I've spoken about many times, my love of that game and how obsessed with it I got.
The Witcher, sorry, I have just remembered, The Witcher 3 has some dialogue at the beginning where you choose... That you're talking with someone about the history of the world and you select options there, but it doesn't really give you the context. Like an actual comic with context would be better than just, so what happened in that battle? This happened.
We won the battle.
Yeah, we won.
Oh yes, I remember when we won.
Exactly, yeah. Sorry, I just remembered
that. No, that's all right. Mass Effect 2's comic was really, really good. So that meant a lot. Mass Effect 1 has since come to PS3. We're still waiting on some kind of collection for PS4, although that's heavily rumored. So if that does come out, I will play it. Mass Effect 3, I thought, was still really, really good, but just not as good as Mass Effect 2. Characters weren't as good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looked better, but it just didn't have the same impact as Mass Effect 2. And Mass Effect 2 is definitely the strongest of the trilogy, as far as I'm concerned.
There you go. There's a few out there, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Let's move on to a section. It's groundbreaking. We've never done it before. It's called What We Play In.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
that's what it says.
Okay.
Peter.
Yes.
What you playing?
I've been playing two games. Mm. One of the games that I played was a bit of Star Wars Battlefront 2 because they've just released BB-8. As a playable hero.
What on earth can he do?
And also the evil BB-8.
What on earth can he do?
Pretty much the same things as BB-8.
Right.
Unfortunately, I never really got the opportunity to play as them. So I only sat down and played a little bit of it, but it never rolled around, if you'll like. So that's annoying, because pretty much the only reason I've not played that game in a month or more, which is quite a while for me. And the only reason I sat down to play it was to get a chance to use them. I think, from what I understand, they're sort of support-based characters for the most part. Like, I think they buff other players, and they have abilities like that. But they do still, I think, have some actual offensive maneuvers or abilities.
Do they set sort of like... heartwarming traps to kill people with.
Oh, almost certainly.
Sort of the comic relief where they set little, oh no, they've booby trapped the door. Oh no, that man's been cut in half.
Yeah, but because it's a stormtrooper, a bucket head.
No one cares.
No one cares.
And it's a little robot that does a thumbs up.
Yeah. So I will definitely try and play more of that between now and the next podcast so that I'm able to say, it's good or it's not good
it's
to
not
play
bad.
As BB-8. But on top of that, been just carrying on with Resi 2 on live stream.
Yeah.
And thoroughly enjoying it.
You did a long old stream this week.
Yeah, I've done two long streams in a row just because I'm enjoying it that much that I can't put it down when the time comes.
Mm.
It's like 7 o'clock and I'm like, yeah, well, we should end it here. And like, I think on both occasions, I've actually, at pretty much 7 o'clock, I've reached the end of a chapter where it gives you the option to save the game.
Right.
And I've gone, yep, save game. Gonna carry on playing, still playing. It's now quarter to 8.
I'm just gonna get up to this bit. I'm just gonna do one more.
But that just says, you know, how good the game is and how much I enjoy it. As I've said before in previous podcasts, it's one of my favorite games of all time, I think.
Yeah.
So just thoroughly enjoying that, to be honest. Yeah. It's still good.
Fantastic.
As it was last week.
Well, speaking of streams, I streamed The Sims 4 this week.
Yes, you did.
And I streamed it with Jack from Cultaholic. I had no idea that it had been a long-standing dream of his.
Mm.
Almost, he said it wasn't really a dream. It just sort of became a running thing, a running joke, that he wanted to do What Culture House when he was at What Culture, but it never came to fruition. And now we've done Triple Jump and Cultaholic House.
Mm.
So the stream was us creating you, me, Simone Milher, as voted for by the viewing public, and then
is that just a legally different?
It's just
name.
It's just female Simon Miller.
Oh, it's a female.
She's jacked, bro.
God, I'd love Simon Miller to be my mum. Is that a weird thing to say?
Well, I did once edit a video where he'd gone and played Injustice 2, I think, at an event, and he said, "I want to marry Batman so I can become Mrs. Batman."
Yeah,
and I photoshopped him into a dress. A wedding dress. He looked beautiful.
I bet he does.
But he's beautiful in a dress.
He is.
Anyway, he could be your mum if you ask him. He's a nice man.
I think he'd allow it.
So we created Simone Milher, and then on top of that we did Ross, Sam, Jack, Adam, and Tom.
Yes.
Because you only have 8 places, 8 slots in the house, so we were limited anyway.
Yeah.
And that was the whole stream, was just creating those people. And I had a mini heart attack because I briefly flashed back to being at school, because we were trying to be nice when creating them, but we put Adam Pacitti in his wrestling attire from when he had a very brief wrestling career as AJ Hazard. So we put him in these tiny little gold shorts.
Yeah.
And he's just suddenly opened the stream room door and just went, "I need to have a chat tomorrow, Ben." And I was like a deer in the headlights. And then he started laughing, and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. I knew I wasn't in trouble, but for some reason, when you just default back to a point in your life where that tone of voice is like, oh no, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
I wasn't in trouble. It's fine.
We were watching it upstairs. Like, I think most people had it on their second screen. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
And we were all watching it. And after about half an hour, you'd made Jack, and I think you were like halfway through you, and Adam went, "They're not going to be playing any actual in-house gameplay, are they?"
To be fair, that was never the plan.
No.
The plan was to create The Sims, and then on the next stream, and it's not going to be next week. It'll be whenever we decide to do it next. We'll then move on to building the house.
Are you going
to
build the office or just a house?
Well, I think we will. I think we will try and build the office.
Oh, that would be good.
So we'll see. But both of those VODs are available now. twitch.tv/triplejump. If you click on videos, they're up there for 14 days. Mm. So go and catch up on those if you like. The other two things, I played through Late Shift again, that FMV game.
Oh, yeah.
Got the Platinum Trophy.
Nice.
And I played through the Shapeshifting Detective. Got all but one of the trophies in that, because I'm now approaching 100 Platinum, 170.
Okay.
And I want that to be something a little bit more significant. And I'm going to make that hidden agenda.
Oh, okay.
So
it won't be long before you hit 200, really.
Well, at this rate, yeah. But I think once I've done this, I'm going to ease off a little.
Right.
Because I wanted another game to play until the next big game comes out. And I bought myself the BioShock collection.
Yeah.
And then they released it on PlayStation Plus. So I returned the BioShock collection.
Right, yeah.
And now I think I'm going to play that in my spare time. I'm going to start at BioShock. Never played BioShock 2.
Haven't you? Never played it. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you played it and just didn't like it as much.
No, I just heard that it wasn't kind of like Arkham Origins. Mm. It was just sort of almost like the black sheep.
Yeah.
Not bad, but for some reason had a reputation. So I'm going to play it, and I'm going to see how I find it.
I want to grab the bio. At the moment, I'm not actually on Plus. When I played Battlefront, that was on offline mode.
Yeah.
I'm tempted just to, because my Plus ran out in January.
And right.
Just before they brought out the BioShock.
It's a very good month this month.
Yeah, and so I'm tempted to, because I know at some point in the next 12 months, I'm probably going to, you know, sign up again, which, you know, it costs, what's it, like 40 quid or something like that?
For a year.
Yeah. So I may as well do that now and get a good free game out of it, rather than do it any other month where I'm not going to be able to get the BioShock collection.
Some weird indie game or something.
Yeah, because I love BioShock.
Yeah, it's excellent. I have a BioShock tattoo, so I feel like I should at least play through all of them.
Yeah, maybe so.
I love 1 and Infinite, but when I played through 1, I was a bit of a coward, and I may have like just sort of sprinted in areas because I wasn't quite as good with horror games.
Right.
And I know it's not a horror game, but it's very tense.
It's a bit spooky.
Yeah, so I'm ready to go in properly and do this thing.
Nice.
Do it.
Do it.
Question 2, Peter.
I've gained a mug.
It's suddenly appeared. Mm. This comes from Darren Kank, great name. "Greetings, gentlemen. Most of your discussions center around console and PC games, but I was wondering, are there any mobile games that you've put a lot of hours into? Ideally, I'm talking about phone games, but I'd also welcome handheld games answers too. Thanks for the podcast, gents. It's the only video games media that I listen to."
Oh, great.
Really sorry to hear that,
yeah,
Darren.
Poor you.
You could do a lot better.
Yeah, you could get some actual scoops on the news if you listen to something else.
Yeah, but something timely. But thank you for your support, and thank you for listening. Much
definitely
appreciated.
Yeah.
Peter, do you play, or have you at any point played a lot of mobile games?
Yeah, but only, I kind of just make sure I've got, I don't even do it anymore, but there was a time, probably sort of throughout my 4 years at university, that I would make sure I always just had a game on my phone to like play on a train or while I'm, you know, sitting waiting for a bus or whatever. It would just be, I would want to make sure that there was something available to me. So I never got particularly attached to any one game. I just couldn't be bothered to like swap it for anything else.
Yeah.
So I played Candy Crush for a long time.
Ooh.
Never put any money into it whatsoever.
My dad plays Candy Crush.
Does he? Yeah. I've never put any money into any mobile game at all. I download free games and I just watch the
suffer
ads.
Suffer through the adverts.
Yeah, yeah. Some occasionally games will allow you, if there's like in-game credits that you earn by just doing well and getting high scores, they will let you buy ad removal with your in-game credits, because I think they're hoping that you will buy, you'll do an in-app purchase for the credits so that you can then spend the credits on the ad.
Right.
But if you sit it out for that long that you finally earn 500 credits just naturally, then, you know, no ads, please.
No ads. Here's a fun hack for you.
Yeah.
That isn't really that useful because, you know, it's a phone and you kind of want to be able to use it as a phone.
Right.
But if you put your phone on airplane mode.
Yes.
As you, clearly you know, it turns off the adverts because they you're not connected to the internet.
So yeah. No, I do often do
that. Pull adverts down.
Yeah.
But, you know, that means you can't answer phone calls.
No.
So it's kind of pointless, really.
Yeah. No, definitely. Other than that, I mean, played the crap out of Snake 2 on my
old Nokia. Forget about it.
That was probably my first mobile game that I that I ever played, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then at the moment, the game that I've got on my phone that I sometimes play is just called Perfect Tower, where you're just dropping shapes that precariously stack.
That sounds like a rip-off of Tricky Towers.
Probably is. I don't know what Tricky Towers is.
Which is a fantastic game. Tricky Towers is on pretty much everything.
It rings up. I've heard of it, but I don't know.
You go head to head.
Oh.
Like stacking next to, you know, with your friend and stuff.
Right.
You have power ups that you can knock their tower over and make ice blocks for them and stuff. It's sounds like a non-free version of that.
Yeah. I mean, Perfect Tower was just one that I think was advertised to me on something like Instagram. And I was like, oh, that looks like one of those sort of somewhat satisfying games to play. And
right.
It's free. I'll press that actual Instagram ad for the first time in my life and download the free game.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I don't play any mobile games and haven't for a long time, mainly because I didn't have space on my old phone.
Mm.
I've just got a new phone. It's an iPhone 6 still, just because I don't want a bigger phone.
No, it's and you
fine.
Want headphones.
Yes, headphones. I want headphones, and also it's got more space than the old one. That's the main reason, and better battery life.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't play games because it would kill my battery and I didn't have a lot of space. And also, I just didn't want to play games on my phone. I don't like it. I don't like smearing my fingers all over it. I'm not a fan of that. But when I used to, the sort of quick, easy throwaway game that I had was iCopter.
Oh, yeah.
Which is that, you know, there's a billion with the same name.
Mm.
And you're a little helicopter or something going from left to right along the screen. You have to tap it. And when you tap it, you'll go up. A bit like Flappy Bird, but less sort of, you know, extreme when you're going up and down.
There's like a tunnel that you're going through. That
randomly generated tunnel.
With little obstacles inside it sometimes.
You can change the speed. You get a high score. I remember that was one of the first things I ever downloaded when I got my iPhone 3G.
Oh, yeah.
About 10 years ago. And my friends and I used to take it in turns to see who could go furthest and stuff. So that was that. I mean, there's what we learned from our we never talk about it, but what we learned from our BAFTA experience, you know, when we went to BAFTA. You remember when we went to BAFTA?
I remember.
Yeah, remember BAFTA? Mm. We don't talk about it very often. But
no.
When we went to BAFTA, what we learned is that actually there are some really, really amazing mobile games that people put a lot of time into that are really thought-provoking and make the best use of the medium.
Mm.
You know, like there was that one, I can't remember what it's called. I'm sure someone will know. And it was nominated then.
For a mobile award.
For the Mobile Game Award, where it would basically act as... It was between two lovers or two partners who were in a war zone,
right,
in the Middle East, and it would act. The correspondence would come through as push notifications, that looked like texts.
Mm.
So it would make perfect sense to be on mobile,
yeah,
or on your phone. And there are plenty of games like that are really clever and really well put together that aren't just Candy Crush or stacking blocks or flying a helicopter through a tunnel.
You played Pokemon Go, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Didn't you?
No, I didn't.
People in the office at the time were playing it. I thought that you were part of...
I was very much aware of the explosion, and it took me ages. And I finally downloaded it. I played it for maybe 10 minutes, and then I stopped.
Oh, no.
Yeah, never got into Pokemon Go, as much as I love Pokemon. So that's not even one that I can mention.
Right.
But one that I have mentioned before is called 80 Days, which is one of those apps.
Oh, yeah.
Where a lot of effort was put in. And
I played it on Steam.
You have to get around the world in 80 days. I think it's best on iPad, personally. Mm-hmm. And you get to decide which way you make your way around, and you have certain resources. You have to just get around the world in 80 days. Mm. I think you are Phileas Fogg.
Yeah.
And you've got your assistant who's with you. And you get into various hijinks, and you get to make decisions about what you do that night in the city, if you get a night's sleep, or if you go out on the town and stuff. And it's presented in this really beautiful art style that's all very stylized. That game's really good, but that's pretty much the only mobile game that I can actually talk about.
Right.
But if you want to get into handhelds, then obviously I've had a lot of handhelds.
Yeah.
You talk about pretty much any Pokemon game and you're golden. If you talk about golden, you're talking about Persona 4 Golden, which is the one on Vita, which obviously I played the crap out of.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it, really. We don't play many mobile games, so sorry we can't offer any more than that. But there are fantastic games out there, and I'm sure there are websites dedicated to covering that kind of stuff.
I just remembered there was that one where it's like a zombie apocalypse, and it uses an actual map of where you are, and there are red dots moving around on the map, and you have to run through the streets and avoid zombies. It's like a real life...
Try not to get hit by a car.
It's like you're integrating into real life. Like, you've just got this map, and you're like, oh, there's zombies down there and down there. I've got to run this way, and they're just.
Is that AR? Is that what that is?
It's like, in a way, it's AR. I mean, it's not really, is it? It's just a map. I guess technically it is AR, but yeah, just
sort of integrating real life into games or what have you.
Yeah,
there we go. Hope that helps a little bit. Right, Peter. Time for something a little bit strange.
Do I require a mobile phone for it?
You might. It's weird news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
It's weird news time. Peter, have you got something strange in your neighborhood?
Yeah. Mine, at first glance, might not seem like a good weird news.
Okay.
But it's, I mean, the final paragraph talks about a couple of other related stories. And I think as a whole, it's all quite an interesting, weird thing.
Right.
But it's certainly not amusing to begin with.
Brilliant. Hit me with that headline. Bring us down.
Pandemic's arrival on the Epic Games... Pandemic the game.
Yeah.
Its arrival on the Epic Games Store has been delayed. Okay.
Okay.
This is by Alistair Jones, Kotaku. The Epic Games Store has been busy giving away a free game each week for months now, and it currently shows no sign of stopping. Players can currently get their hands on Farming Simulator 19, and later this week, 3 digital board games were set to make their way into rotation, but one has been removed. French board game developer Asmundi Digital confirmed last week it would be giving away 3 of its games for free ahead of their official arrival on the store. Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne, and Pandemic were all due to be given away for free. But while the first 2 titles are still available, the latter will no longer be available. Mm. I've played Pandemic on physical tabletop. It's quite fun.
Okay.
In a statement by a PC Gamer, the The Epic confirmed that...
L'Epic.
We've shifted the release of Pandemic as a free game in our store to a later date. Actually says in out store to a later date.
Brilliant.
So this
brilliant.
Is a really good write-up.
Yeah, yeah.
The publisher hasn't provided an explanation for the change, but it seems pretty likely that the decision is linked to the coronavirus outbreak, which has now killed more than 400 people. Pandemic tasks players with containing deadly diseases as they spread across the world. So I think the weird or interesting thing about that is that, you know, coronavirus, a very real disease, is having far wider reaching implications than you would expect. Obviously, the most important implication is that people are getting ill and dying.
Yes.
But it's down here at the bottom, it says, the outbreak has seen a number of other gaming-related side effects, from a spike in the sales of Plague Inc.
Yes, have you played Plague Inc.?
I've not, but I'm aware of it.
Plague Inc. is fantastic. That is a good mobile game that I have played, actually, where you create your own virus and you sort of level it up and try and infect everything.
I played a free web version, like a similar thing, years ago, like in the mid-noughties, which I think was actually called Pandemic before the board game was popular.
Right.
Or Epidemic, it may have been called.
But it's super interesting because it gives you an understanding of how these things spread and how they evolve and adapt and all that kind of stuff.
Well, exactly. So that's what I mean. And then the second thing is to the suspension of esports events across China and the surrounding region.
That's understandable.
Which is understandable.
Because gamer boys are filthy.
Of course, yeah. But so while, you know, the main headline here, Pandemic has been delayed because they don't want to be insensitive about coronavirus, that's not that weird, and it's not that interesting or amusing even. But okay. The fact that there's been a spike in sales of Plague Inc. is a really weird thing. People are playing a game about virus, you know, spreading and trying to optimize the spread of a virus because it's like in the zeitgeist currently.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really strange thing. There's actually a whole write-up about that, which maybe I could have even just brought that as a weird news. But it says, like, the Chinese public, however, seem to be looking at the outbreak with a bit of a sense of humor.
Hmm.
And they're all playing Plague Inc. now. You know, something to do while you're, I guess, shut up in your apartment.
In Wuhan.
Stay safe, everyone out there, if you can.
Of course, take precautions if you're in an area where... I mean, they brought the two UK cases to Newcastle. To be treated. So that's bloody brilliant, isn't it? Cheers for that.
And the one other place that I can go to for sanctuary is Yorkshire. Yeah. And there's a confirmed case in York. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
We're all safe.
Yeah.
It should be fine.
Yes.
The Who are doing everything right in
they
terms
are.
Of containing and taking appropriate precautions. So knock on wood, there is no wood in this studio, is it? Peter's head. Knock on wood that everything will be fine. But that is super interesting.
Yeah.
People want to see how it works.
They're all playing those games now.
A bit morbid.
Much like flu as well, the reason... to add as to why it will be fine is it's mostly a problem for people who are old or unwell.
Or already unwell.
Yeah, so don't go being mean to people from other countries just because you think they've got coronavirus.
No.
Because that is not okay. There's been a lot of that happening.
Not okay.
It's in the news.
Yeah, I have seen actually some people have been discriminated against. Some American-born Asian man who was 21 years old apparently was fired from his service job.
God.
Where he worked at a restaurant because he made diners uncomfortable because he looked Chinese.
Wow.
Which is just another level of, that's not okay, is it?
Did you hear about that guy? I think this was in China, actually, but the guy who had a heart attack and no one wanted to give him CPR because they thought get coronavirus from him, and he dies.
That's sad.
It's terrible.
That's sad. There needs to be, I mean, the way that the media is representing it is that this is the doomsday virus, but we've been through it before with the bird flu and all the other nonsense. It's take precautions and be informed, but don't not administer CPR on someone.
Yeah.
For example.
It's not much different to flu, basically.
No,
and
just
you don't go mad when it's flu season, do you? I mean, you know, just calm down.
Just be sensible.
Yeah.
Well, that is weird. Would you like another weird thing?
Yes, please.
It took a while for this to actually appear as an article.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw it break on Twitter from Wario64, who's a very good follow, by the way.
Right.
Who spotted this. This write-up, though, comes from Game Rant.
Oh, okay.
PlayStation social media icon removed due to copyright.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
As the world becomes increasingly dominated by social media, it makes sense that policing copyright infringement would become a bigger priority than ever before. After all, the use of copyright claims has already been a force for good in the gaming world a number of times. One instance being in June last year, when Twitch sued a handful of users that were illegally streaming copyrighted movies on the site. However, on occasion, copyright strikes don't exactly work how they're intended to. Case in point.
Well, we should know.
The 2nd of February, where PlayStation's official Twitter icon was hit with a copyright strike. The image replaced by a caption simply reading, "Media not displayed. This image has been removed in response to a report from the copyright holder." It seems PlayStation had hilariously managed to launch a copyright claim against its own profile's icon, soon going viral as Twitter users found the company's situation hilarious. Naturally, there's also the possibility that PlayStation's profile picture was taken down by other Twitter users as a prank.
Mm.
It's not as if this is a rare occurrence online either, with YouTube in particular often seeing a number of videos taken down by aggravated viewers hoping to copyright strike content creators to cut off their monetization. Whether the copyright strike was a prank orchestrated by Twitter users or perhaps simply a mistake on PlayStation's part is unknown. However, the company now has its profile picture back, so it appears the humorous incident was harmless in the long run.
That sort of exposes a flaw in the system, though, doesn't it? Because it says this has been taken down due to a complaint by the copyright holder.
Yeah.
Now, PlayStation clearly didn't deliberately target their own social media profile.
No.
So it wasn't that PlayStation looked at the PlayStation profile and went, no.
No.
You know, so there's either an automated process there that's gone wrong, in which case, why are you automating these things with processes that can go wrong?
Yep.
Or, as you say, or as the article says, it could have just been orchestrated by other Twitter users, in which case it's absolute rubbish that it's a claim made by the copyright holder. Clearly, they're not actually verifying where these claims are coming from. They're going, oh, someone said that that's copyright infringement. Must have been the copyright owner who reported that, I guess. We'll take it down.
Also, I think not allowing someone to have your company's logo as a Twitter profile picture is a bit much.
It's a bit stinky,
isn't it? It's a bit much. Now, I'm wondering if this is in light, and this actually is weird news of its own, because this tweet went viral from people who are unable to read, perhaps.
Right.
There was an account called PlayStation at PlayStaten.
Right, okay.
Who had all their Twitter kitted out to look exactly like the official account that did a tweet that was exactly the same as the one they did last year announcing the sort of event where they would talk about the PS4.
Mm.
Not last year, sorry. You know, when the
last
PS4 was coming
out.
Yeah. Whereas, like, join us at the PlayStation Theater to talk about the future of PlayStation. Thousands and thousands of retweets and likes. And then you just let, and it's at PlayStaten. So I don't know if this is in response
to
that.
It could be.
Or if it's just them clamping down again. But God, that seems petty. We've spoken before about you having Twitter content, important content that you've made that had licensed music in, and that was taken down on Twitter,
what it was now,
which is surprising because there's no way to monetize it, so you weren't making any money off it.
No,
it was just for entertainment purposes.
Just got sent a bulk email with everyone's usernames in it.
That's a breach. That
seems
is
like a bit of a breach of copy of privacy.
Yeah.
But just a big bulk takedown.
Crazy. Mm. Well, there we go. It's all sorted now. It was sorted quite quickly, and I was searching around for a couple of days for some kind of article about it, and none were appearing because I think it was just so fast.
You thought, oh, I'm going to have to write my own. I'm
going to have to just bring the tweet along.
This is weird news from Ben Potter here.
Yeah,
thank
from
you, Ben
me.
Potter.
Well, at Wario64 on Twitter. Yeah. Thank you very much. Let's move on to question three. This comes from Caroline O'Brien.
Yes, it does.
What does Caroline say?
Hi, Ben and Peter.
This Hello.
It's a long one.
It is.
Thank you for submitting a meaty question, Caroline.
Girthy.
Hi, Ben and Peter. I just watched 1917 on the weekend. Great film, by the way. Definitely worth seeing if you haven't already. I haven't, but I want to.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed Dunkirk, so which is similar.
Mm. And I've noticed a few people commenting on its relationship to video games. Most noticeably, someone on Twitter asking if they should go see it, as from the trailer, they had assumed it was just another video game-esque war film.
How dare you!
There have also been a few reviews praising it for not being too video gamey, whatever that means. I have to admit, this stuck in my throat a bit. It seems to me that these opinions are being purported by people who have a rather narrow view of what video games can be. Like the recent media claims that games are all violent and mindless, this reporting seems to suggest that video games are incapable of having interesting storylines. Am I being too sensitive here? In my opinion, 1917 was very much like a video game, in the best sense. It reminded me of The Last of Us in terms of storytelling and characterization. But mainstream media seems to think comparing a film to a video game is an insult, whereas I feel they're both different but strong ways of telling meaningful stories. And of course, many games are duds, but so are many films. Anyway, I'm rambling now. What are your opinions?
We'll tell you, Caroline. Let's play devil's advocate.
Right.
You see my big horns on my head?
There they are.
I'm ready to condemn some foul souls to hell for eternity.
You're going
to
advocate Satan?
Yes.
Yeah?
That's me, satanic advocate, Ben Potter. Things can be compared to video games in the sense that, well, it's a bit Call of Duty, isn't it? Where there's big explosions and ridiculous set pieces and stuff. But that's where the devil's advocate ends, because Call of Duty has come a long way since then.
Yeah.
And also, those games are inspired by action movies from the 80s.
Yeah.
So...
And also, I think it's one thing to say that a film is a bit specific video game, Call of Duty, for example,
right,
or whatever. It's a bit Manhunt, this game.
Yeah.
This film, sorry. But I don't know what it means to say that something is or isn't video gamey.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that all video games share is the idea that you're in control of what's going on, of, you know, of the action. And even then, you know, walking simulators are only borderline, you know, you move a character around, but pretty much it's like a film that's just being presented to you.
Yeah.
So to say that something is video gamey is just such a broad strokes thing. You know, you should at least be saying, oh, it's a bit like one of those action-packed first-person shooters, or, oh, you know, it's a bit boring because it was just like Command and Conquer. The entire film was just a top-down view of a battlefield or something. But,
yeah,
you know, to just say something that something is video gamey doesn't even make sense as such.
Contextually, it implies that it's childish and
over
the top. That's sort of what they're saying.
No, I understand.
But in the same sense that they should specify exactly what the flip you're talking about when you're talking about video games, there's no way they could do that, because clearly this is coming from a place of utter ignorance. And
it's not
harmful ignorance. You know, it's not gonna hurt anyone. It's not gonna perpetuate negative stereotypes. It's in many ways it's petty, and I'm not calling Caroline petty, but we've all been there, because this is clearly a hobby that everyone listening cares about. And they're just what they're doing is they're dismissing the biggest entertainment industry in the world.
Yeah.
By just saying it's a bit video gamey. And it is annoying, and education is the way to sort that out. But I'd argue that the kind of people who are saying these things are not going to suddenly start playing video games.
No.
And to sort of draw a parallel in a really, really fun way to politics.
Yeah.
What I will say is that increasingly generations now are growing up more aware, more accepting, more tolerant. And ultimately, the bulk of the people who are causing, quote-unquote, the problems, in this case, not knowing what a video game is, they're increasingly going to leave these jobs where they're in a position where they are of influence and can talk about video games or films being a bit video gamey. Or they're just going to die.
Yeah.
And then they're gone. And increasingly, those positions are going to be overtaken by people who have grown up with video games and know better than to say, oh, 1917 is actually really good. I thought it was just going to be a bit video gamey. But it's like, what does that mean? What are you saying?
You're right in that, like, age is definitely an issue. Is in that, like, you know, a lot of film reviewers, as a very general generalization.
Hit them back with another generalization.
Bam. All the top tier major newspaper film critics are over
50,
40 or more.
Yeah,
they're not. But like the people with these opinions often are over 40 or 50 years old. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, they may have had a bit of video gaming experience once upon a time, but back when they were playing video games, it was very much you are just there to shoot everything up.
Yeah, you know, they've not been playing God of War.
No, exactly. They've played, like, at best, like Contra, maybe, or, you know, Duke Nukem.
Mm-hmm. Doom.
Yeah, Quake. Doom. Exactly. So they may have played those games once upon a time. They're no longer sitting at home with a PS4, you know, playing The Last of Us or Uncharted or God of War or even, you know, Spider-Man or anything like that. You know, they think that all video games are just running around, either driving round and round a track, mm-hmm. or shooting every single thing that moves.
Yeah, they're a waste of time.
Yeah, and they're inane and they have no story or depth to them. That's what their understanding of video games is.
Absolutely, and I feel like video games have got it stacked against them because you play games and they're called games. Mm. So anyone who's not aware really of what a game is just sees that and thinks, well, you play it, then it's a, you know, it's trivial.
It's like hopscotch doesn't have a narrative.
Exactly, you just play it. Yeah. It's a waste of time, you know, that kind of stuff. So you're absolutely justified in that sticking in your craw a little bit. Mm. What I would say, though, is that this kind of thing is so exhausting, you know, to have to... What I would say is we all know what these things are. These people that have these opinions, as it's not damaging to society... Don't even waste your breath on them.
Just
try to tune them out, because we all know that they're just talking from a place of ignorance.
Useless.
Unfortunately, there are far worse places or far worse things that people are talking about currently from places of ignorance. Mm-hmm. So in this one in particular, while it is really annoying, I say we just whatever.
Let them get on with it. It's the biggest
entertainment industry in the world. You know, screw them. If they don't understand it, they're literally just preaching to the choir, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're just going to be talking to the people who share those same views.
Not like and a chamber.
Those people are increasingly going to not be present, mm-hmm. Until it's just people who actually understand what's going on. If there's an opportunity to engage in a conversation with someone about video games, like, you know, in real life, then absolutely do it. But don't. They're just not worth your time. Mm. Don't feel like you need to be that person on Twitter who goes, because then, you know, that's probably just as bad.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking specifically to Caroline here. I'm just talking in general. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Caroline.
Hope you're having a good day. But I agree. I think we both agree. Mm. It's sort of reductive to use that terminology, but it's coming from a place of ignorance, and those people are probably old or ill-informed, and it's not really worth engaging with them, really.
No.
Screw them.
I think you're right about, you know, if you do get the chance to have the conversation with someone who's going to be receptive and open to having
a
discussion. Yeah, a friend or family, then why not? But given that, you know, we don't know Mrs. Mary Hate Games. That's her name.
Roger Ebert, he's dead.
Yeah. Then you know, don't need to worry about it. I'd be interested to have a conversation though with my parents or my grandparents about games, because I know they'd be open to, you know, hearing about it, and they would probably come at me with like, oh well, so my understanding is do you just like shoot everyone? That sounds really horrible. And if I was able to just tell them like, no, look, like maybe if give me 10 minutes of your time and just sit them down in front of like a well-chosen moment from a video
game. Untitled Goose Game.
Yeah.
This is a video game.
The opening from The Last of Us.
Grandmother's Every... Yeah, I don't think they'd like that one as
no.
much.
No. This is a game that's like really critically acclaimed for its narrative, and like, oh, okay, yeah, let's see this. And then the first 10 minutes is just that. I don't think that would convert.
We're not saying video games don't have a way to go before they're appreciated as they should be.
Mm.
But we're getting there. Yeah. And if anyone still has that attitude, that's the same attitude people had 20 years ago.
Yes.
And if they're still holding it, then they're not worth your time.
No.
Or at least, you know, I'm not saying disown your family. I'm just saying it's not worth engaging in that particular line of conversation, because it's just not, you're not going to get anything out of it, really, are you?
Yeah, maybe so.
There we go.
That was almost a big discussion, that, wasn't it?
It was.
A big old chat that we had.
Speaking of which,
mm-hmm.
it's time for another one. Oh. It's the big discussion! Big discussion time. This comes from Rudy Manchego.
Oh, I love Manchego. Have you ever had any?
No. What is it?
Type of chidge.
Is it?
Cheese,
it's a chidge. I love a chidge.
I think it's sheep's cheese.
Oh, maybe not.
And I no, but it's that doesn't sound nice, but it It's very good.
Don't talk to me about sheep.
And I can eat
don't
it
talk to me about sheep's cheese.
Without just feeling sick.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, therefore, it's the best cheese.
Mm.
Dear Ben and Peter, long-time follower, relatively new Patreoner. Thank you very much.
Mm.
With the recent review bombing of Warcraft 3, what are your views on the practice? Certainly, as consumers, one could argue that it is a valid way to express legitimate disappointment with a product that one has purchased. There has also been some cases where this has helped to reverse unpopular decisions from publishers. However, it is also ripe for abuse, as clearly many people like to hop on the hate train just for the pure sake of it. Do you find chaps see it as a legitimate model for dissent, or do you think this kind of behaviour is giving the world the word mob a bad name? Keep up the top work and rather excellent podcast. Thanks, Rudy Manchego. Thank you, Rudy.
Thank you, Rudy. I mean, the word mob, it used to be a very, you know...
It used to be a very, very positive word.
Had really good standing.
We need to reclaim mob as a word. A mob of Manchego.
Mm. Ooh, that sounds good.
Mm. Mm. So let's talk about Warcraft 3.
Mm-hmm.
This has just come out. It's obviously a remaster of sorts. And Blizzard talked a really big game, and it's come out, and it's actually disappointing in almost every way. It's not been reviewed very well, full stop.
Mm.
And then when it comes to the critical, not the critical, the user reviews on Metacritic, it has been review bombed.
It has. I mean, I think the main issue that people have with the game is that really they've not done a great deal with it.
No.
They've remodeled, I think, I don't think even necessarily all of the units. I think they've remodeled all the heroes for sure, but I think the other... Some of them have just... Obviously, they've had their textures updated, but I don't think they've been remodeled as such. Might not be true. They might have redone everything. But really, other than that, like, it looks very, very similar. It's just in 4K now. And they said they were going to, like, overhaul the UI, and they actually don't seem to have done that.
Mm.
I think it's just been a bit of a disappointment because Warcraft 3, very good game, still holds up. I played a lot of Warcraft 3 once upon a time, and I would, although I haven't done in many years, I would happily go back to it, and I know I would enjoy it. And I kind of feel like I would just play Warcraft 3. I wouldn't pay good money for what is supposed to be a new game or a remastered, you know, brand new fresh version of it, and apparently isn't, you know?
In some places, they've supposedly made it worse as well.
Right.
There are some things that are actually worse than they were in the original. And I might be wrong here.
Mm.
Citation very much needed.
Yeah.
But I think it's a similar situation to Dark Souls Remastered, where they replaced every version of the original Dark Souls on PC with this remastered version,
right,
which annoyed a lot of people. And I don't know if this is true. I might be wrong here, but I saw one of the comments or one of the reviews saying, let me have access to my old maps, my old custom stuff, which leads me to believe that potentially this reforged edition replaced the original Warcraft 3 available on store places.
God.
I'm not entirely sure. Either way, they've really, really annoyed people.
Mm.
But review bombing is fairly self-explanatory. It's when people go to usually Metacritic and the user reviews, they just absolutely smash it with zeros, sick making zeros, and bomb it all the way down. So currently it has a 60 on Metacritic from actual critics, and that is not great for a Warcraft game, especially one so beloved. And the user score is similar, isn't it?
Yeah, the user score is 0.5 out of 10.
So or when you 5 out of 100.
Yeah, when you say similar, I mean, it's not similar to 60%, given that it's 5 out of 100.
No, it's not good it's in a loose sense.
Yeah, so, you know, that is clearly the result of people going absolutely insane. Because surely, I mean, it's not... It's like we say when we don't allow a 0% review score on worst games ever.
Yeah.
It's not a 5% good game, is it?
No.
It's
ultimately, I'm in two minds because Rudy's right. That it is a very valid way of voicing your frustration as a purchaser. However, there's no way to verify purchases like there is on Steam, for example, with reviews. So anybody can leave those reviews. While it can get the message across potentially that you're annoyed, it then does genuinely not help people who are looking for user reviews.
No.
Because they look at it and I mean, job done if you want to disrupt a company's business, I suppose. If I don't know how many people put stock in user reviews, but, you know, someone might come and look at that and go, oh God, no, okay, never mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, oh, that's really annoying, actually, because I'd quite like an honest consumer's review rather than a critic's review.
Yeah, that's my main response to the question would be that I think, number one, you need to make sure that it's being done in a place where there is verification of purchase, which in some places you don't have to have... Actually, you don't have to prove that you've bought and played the game in order to leave a review. So that's really bad, because people find out about this review bombing and go, "Yeah, right, I'll do that then." Yeah, okay.
Oh, Blizzard, yeah, they're the ones that done the Blitzchung, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Which, they're not doing well, are they, at the moment?
No,
Blizzard. They're on a roll. It's like Bethesda.
It is, actually. It's a lot like that. And then, as you say, it's not actually helpful for people who want a genuine, like, actual breakdown of, you know, how good is this game? Don't tell me how good it is in comparison to, well, you, even in comparison to the original, maybe I do want to know how good it is. But it's, again, it's not 5% compared to the previous game, I would have thought. Mm-hmm. But the only other thing that it makes me think in terms of verification of purchase is, you know, do these people, I don't know if anyone would go out of their way to do this, but would some people even go as far as to buy the game just so that they can leave a negative review? If it's a place that requires you to have played it, you know, do you think people are doing that as well? They might not be, but
I don't think so. Steam obviously is one that actually, in people's reviews, it says how long they've played the game well. So you can see, oh, I hated this game, half an hour on record.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, maybe it's just not for you then. I don't know. I don't know that there is a good way to go about this, because if you really are upset and angry about a game's reception, there aren't many avenues you can take. You can not buy it, but really you want to communicate with the company that, no, this is actually really bad.
Yeah.
What can you do? A petition? Those do nothing most of the time.
Mm.
What's that going to do? Putting on my horns again, this is the only way that you make companies pay attention and you make websites write about the situation, is by doing something that is actually quite damaging and a little bit extreme, really. There should be a middle ground, but I don't know what that would be.
You're right, because actually coming into this discussion, what I was going to say was, I actually think this is a really bad practice, even in terms of a way to show dissent. I was going to say, what I think people should do is give a truly, genuinely honest review and a percentage that reflects what they think about the game. You know, people who are fans of top-down RTS fantasy games like the original Warcraft 3, really, if you think about it, at the end of the day, if they play this game, they're probably going to think it's okay. You know, I understand that they're saying some really bad decisions have been made here by Blizzard, and I really don't like some of these decisions. But that doesn't take a game from being 70, 80, 90% in some people's view, the original, down to 5%.
Takes it to 60.
Exactly.
That it seems takes it about to, right.
Literally, yeah. Like, you know, I am much more inclined to believe the critics' reviews on this.
Yeah. Fundamentally works, but disappointing.
Yeah. So in some ways, I think that, you know, I'm completely against review bombing, and I think everyone should just be giving an honest review. But then when you put it like that, like, what other way is there to, like, tell companies that, no, this is categorically not okay what you've done here?
Yeah,
you know, yeah, maybe that is the only way to do it.
Which is really frustrating.
Yeah.
And it has happened before as well. We've got a few examples here. Mm. Battlefront 2 obviously has a very low user score.
Yeah.
It's got 1.2 out of 10. The game Devotion by the Taiwanese studio Red Candle Games was review bombed by Chinese players after they discovered an in-game poster that referenced the meme of Xi Jinping censoring the character Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
You know, that one, that's objectively funny, because flip that guy.
I mean, this one's pretty shocking to me. Mm. Gears 5 was review bombed on Steam, primarily by players from China, after the game was pulled from sale in that region.
Yeah.
So is that, whose fault is it that it was pulled from, did China say this game's too violent, we're not allowing it? Because then that's really harsh on... you know, Microsoft.
Well, yeah, exactly. In that instance, it's a small spurned player group, and it's not even. I don't think it was even Microsoft's decision. There's a Wikipedia page that's in the link dump all about review bombing, and this is one of the cited examples. It was published by someone else in that territory,
right?
And they decided to pull it, so it was nothing to do with Microsoft.
But they would still suffer because the review score is global.
The review score has been bombed by Chinese players.
Yeah.
It continues. Death Stranding was review bombed on Metacritic upon its launch. I'm not entirely sure why. It might be because it was exclusive. It might be because it was weird. Mm. I don't really know. But, of course, as you might expect, given that it's the internet, there are some not great reasons for review bombing games. And in these instances, it is genuinely damaging for no good reason whatsoever.
Yeah. So we've got one here. The Creative Assembly's Total War Rome 2, initially released in 2013, had been patched in early 2018 to include the potential for women generals to emerge from the game's mechanics. Okay. Sounds good.
Fine, yeah.
When an image of the game showing one player's armies all led by female generals, users on Steam complained about the
historical accuracy of this. I don't think that's accurate.
A female community content manager stated the Creative Assembly's stance was that the game should be historically authentic, not historically accurate. But a portion of these users began to review bomb the title on Steam. 0 out of 10 because there are women in it.
Women generals. Now, again, putting the horns on, I understand someone who might want to be playing that from an actually historically authentic standpoint might want perhaps even just an option in game to disable female generals. But to kick up such a fuss over that makes you a massive sexist and the biggest child in the world.
Yeah, just the worst kind of person.
Just so stupid. So you review bomb a game because it's got women in it. That's literally what it boils down to. There's no other way around it.
Why even expend the energy? It's one thing. If you're just the kind of person who gets upset by that, then fine. Keep living your life.
You'd die pretty fast in that battle, you weak
you would,
man.
Yeah. With your Cheeto crumbs on your fingers, with your sword slipping out your hand.
Not going to have much protection with that fedora, my dude.
No, I mean, when I say fine, get on with your life, not fine, actually. It's not fine. But anyway, you know.
Hey, why don't you review bomb this podcast episode?
You do you. But exactly. But why, if you're that offended by the notion of female generals in that game.
Yeah.
Just be mad about it and move on. Don't then go out of your way to log on to Steam. You probably log in all the time, to be
petty,
honest.
How petty do you have to be?
Right, I'm going to open the game page. Review. Yes. Worst game ever made. 0%.
There are women in it.
Yeah.
Get the women out of my fighting, big men fighting game.
Sickening.
Again, historical accuracy. I do sort of understand that, but it's absolutely not this reaction that should have been at the forefront of people's minds.
Right.
It did continue to say that actually mods became popular that would allow an option to disable that. But what a childish thing to review bomb a game for.
Yeah.
Additionally, Firewatch was review bombed on Steam in September 2017 after its developer, Campo Santo, filed a DMCA takedown against a video PewDiePie made of their game following an incident where PewDiePie uttered a racial slur during an unrelated live stream. So, again, I feel like maybe that's probably justified that they don't want a video of their game on a channel of a man in such hot water at the time.
At the time, yeah. That was a really big thing.
It was huge. And
then,
it's had knock-on effects for everybody else on YouTube as well. It's the reason that adverts on YouTube are so hard and so low-paying now.
It is.
It's because of that. Mm. So I fully understand Campo Santo wanting him to not have videos of their game. But his audience, and I'm sure he didn't tell them to do it.
No.
Because ultimately, as much of a massive idiot as he seems to be. He seems to be a nice person. He's just a moron.
Mm.
I don't think he told them to do this, but they took it upon themselves to then review Firewatch, which is a brilliant little game.
Yeah.
And something that everyone
Lovely
should play.
Game.
So, review bombing, in summary, not always fantastic. It seems to be the last resort because there's no other real way to sort of show your anger at publishers and developers. But in some instances, as a general rule, there's got to be a better way, and it can absolutely be used in harmful and negative ways.
Unfortunately, though, it reminds me a little bit of just the democratic process in the UK as a young person
who's never had an election go their way once.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, as a general rule, people in our demographic are kind of liberal, left-leaning, and, you know, we've probably voted that way pretty much all our lives. And within our lifetime, it's always landed the other way around. But, you know, we can only be so butthurt about that if the fact of the matter is that more people in the country voted to the right than the left, and therefore that's how democracy works. Mm. So in the same way, if you're really annoyed that there's no good way to tell EA, for example, stop putting loot crates in your games, yeah, you might be really offended by that. But unfortunately, they're making enough money from all the people who are apparently fine with it and willing to go with it that they're going to carry on doing it. So, you know, yeah, you might have a strong opinion about that, but they just have to look at the numbers and go, well, this is how it is. So in some ways, you know, who are we to review bomb a company when, you know, at the end of the day, what they look at is, did this sell well? Did we make money on it? Did people like it? Again, I'm very much wearing the horns in this sentence, and it makes me feel sick to even say it.
But, right.
You know, that's how these things are measured.
Keep fighting the system. Keep doing the good fight, but maybe, you know, maybe stop and think about what it is that you're actually doing.
Yeah, is it worth your energy?
Know, those last two examples just make everybody involved in review bombing sound like awful people.
Mm.
And the other ones are just, you know, sort of damaging to a company that maybe it isn't their fault. However,
because they feel they don't have...
In this instance with Warcraft...
Mm.
It sounds like it's justified, but obviously 0.5 is not a true reflection of the game, so that's an abuse of the review system.
Yeah.
So, but what do you do?
Yeah, there's no other...
What's the alternative, apart from to review bomb? You know, the strongly worded letter?
Well, that's my point. Like, the alternative is to vote with your wallet, but if there aren't enough people doing that...
People will still buy it.
Exactly. If other people are still buying Battlefront or Warcraft, then... Yeah, that's what makes people review bomb. So, I don't know. I can see it from both sides, really. Apart from in the case of Total War.
Yes.
Shut
and,
up.
And racial slurs.
And racial slurs, yeah.
So there we go. Hopefully that got a little bit too, not too heated. It got a bit heated there, but hopefully people can understand where we're coming from. Obviously, we're incredibly inclusive and we want everyone to come together and enjoy games and talk about games. And I know people hate when politics are discussed, but I think it was very relevant to this discussion about, you know, believing in certain things and having to accept defeat on certain things and just all having to get on with it together.
Yeah.
But hopefully it didn't, we didn't upset anybody there. And if we did, please don't review bomb the video.
No, please.
Because, you know, you remember can't give a video 0.5.
Well, remember when you used to be able to give 5-star ratings
on
YouTube?
Oh, yeah, that was a long time ago.
Thumbs up,
it?
Thumbs down, yeah.
Weird. Well, hopefully we didn't annoy too many people, but I think generally people can agree that It's an inelegant solution.
It's certainly inelegant, yeah.
Whether or not it's effective is debatable, but it certainly can be used for negative purposes and to support kind of unsavory beliefs, which is a shame. Anyway, that is the discussion for today. Yes, big old discussion. Please leave your thoughts in the comments below. Let's try to keep it civil if we can. You know, no name calling, no shouting. Let's try and all be friends here while having a sensible discussion.
Yeah.
Peter, how can people find us should they wish to do that?
Search for Team Triple Jump anywhere you like. Bebo, MySpace.
Forgot about Bebo.
YouTube.com and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump is where you can find all our content. We've got mods over there, Laura Brotovich and Cecil Prompt, looking after the streams, which we do on both of those channels. The social medias are twitter.com and facebook.com/Team Triple Jump. We sort of look after the Twitter. Luke Eldon is our Facebook man on Facebook.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Luke. Patreon.com/Team Triple Jump is where you can go to get all kinds of little extra bonuses, including asking questions on this podcast, going into an exclusive room in our Discord, which is bit.ly/Team Triple Jump. Mods over there, Jack, Joe, and Crimson Dragonfly. But also available on the Patreon, things like Early Worst Games Ever and other things. Physical merchandise, too.
Whoa.
The podcast, if you're watching on video, is available in audio form at play.acast.com/s/triple jump. And the website, triplej.mup. That's J-U.M-P.
Fantastic.
Which is where you can get other kinds of physical merchandise, too.
like spoons.
Spoons.
If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do at that Peter Austin and at confused underscore dude. Instagram at that Peter Austin and at Ben Potter 20. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday and Thursday, Monday and Tuesday being solo streams on Twitch with the VODs going up immediately afterwards on Twitch. And Thursday being the joint Blaze It stream. There was no Thursday stream this week because, as we said at the start of the show, we did it on Friday because that was the closest to our anniversary as possible. So that VOD will be up on YouTube on Monday, if you'd like to see that. We played the worst game of 2019.
Yes, we did.
Something about Eternity of Unicorns.
Unicorns.
Can't remember what it was exactly, but I imagine, we haven't played it yet when we're recording, I imagine it was dreadful.
It's supposed to be quite hard, actually.
Brilliant,
can't
wait.
It's be a little bit Soulsborne combat.
No,
yeah.
No, don't say
it's
that.
It's the Soulsborne
no,
of Unicorn
stop it.
Games.
Stop it, get out. Worst Games is fortnightly, Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. It is a Worst Games Ever week. If you're a patron of $5 or more, you will have had access to it on Friday. Everybody else will get it tomorrow, that being Sunday, so please enjoy. The podcast is every Saturday. We do shows every other week. There was actually a show this week as well as Worst Games Ever, and that was Rules Boss. Speaking of which, please, please, please go and support the Vectronom, Rules Boss, and Quipscope videos we did this week. One went out on Wednesday, one on Thursday. They are our first ever sponsored videos. Mm. We actually got contracted to cover those games.
Yeah,
and that's a really big get for us. That's a really big deal. And the more people who watch those, the better. And above all else, please click through the link in the description because that's what they track to see how much interest is gauged and how well we've done at telling you all to check out the game. So please, please, please do that. Very much appreciated. Rules Boss, you know, we did a really fun challenge with it.
Yeah, we did. I enjoyed it, actually. It was really good. Yeah.
Well, Peter wasn't allowed to listen to it. And as a rhythm action game, that's, you know, a bit of a challenge. So please go and watch that. And while you're at it, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with algorithms.
Which leaves just enough time for Ben to read our sponsor.
Yes.
It's not Vectronom today.
The sponsor this week is Poor Craft 3. Mm. Maybe you see that Warcraft 3 Reforged Edition, you think, I don't want that.
No.
That is, it's been review bombed. It's got
5% rating.
Got 5% rating. I don't want that. Maybe something a little bit more affordable that I know what I'm going to get.
Mm.
And if it's different to the original, at least I know it's going to be different to the original.
Yeah.
It's called Poor Craft 3. It's made out of paper. Very affordable. 3 monthly installments of 49p.
Oh, okay.
And we will ship you over the course of 3 months various pieces of Amazon boxes, used Amazon boxes, of course, and cereal boxes, and some vague instructions as to how to construct your very own little sprites and a sort of map for you to push them across with, you know, perhaps some kind of long stick with a thing on the end, like they do from World War II.
Yeah.
You know, that one.
The mere notion of 3 monthly installments of 49p is just, I'd rather just pay it all in one.
It's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a frightening prospect.
Yeah.
So go and check that out now at poor.craft.3/paper.buynow. Oh, my voice is
gone. Bye now.
It's time to bye now. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye
now.
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 Say bye now.
Bye now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.